take it to its extreme. It's a very interesting vision. And that, and I contrast it with a feminist vision. I think even lesbian feminism is more respectful of maleness than Schlafly's vision. Yeah.
I'm just interested when you were saying at the end that she's campaigning for child care vouchers and that women who stay at home to take care of their kids should be financially recompensed for that. That sounds exactly like the radical feminist wages for housework campaign.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the wheels
and
that come sort of full circle.
On the other side
exactly
of the world.
The same.
Yeah.
And how does she see any sort of conflict in that?
Well, she probably doesn't pay much. No, she would say wages for housework is demeaning and that women, what they're doing isn't housework. You know, it's making a home. I'm just speaking for her.
Yeah.
But I think her point of view is recognized in a lot of welfare state policies. You know, in Europe, a lot of places do give mother wage or mm-hmm. child allowance, whatever they call it.
So she wouldn't say that it's like wrong for a woman to depend on her husband's wages in order to pay either for her to stay at home or for...
She's not really drawing that argument. It's much more the consistency argument that if the nation wants its children cared for, there's a group of people out there who are doing the job, and they shouldn't be penalized. Their family shouldn't be penalized. Just as the professional child care is a subsidy to the working woman, you don't want to give too much advantage to the worker. She already has advantage. She's making money. See, she's realistic about that.
Well, and if you can be paid for it, you'll stay home and take care of your kids. And
true. She wants to motivate the women to stay because she truly believes in her heart, as do all her listeners, that the child brought up by its own mother is better off. There's much more to say about child, a parent. There's a whole issue of control. Her listeners fear they're losing control of their children through the schools, through all the counseling. These are the people who don't like the fact there's a psychologist in school, who writes to the mother and say, we've noticed some behavior of difficulties of your child. And the mother, this is an old-fashioned view that it's my mother's view. I mean, I don't care what other mothers are doing. I don't care what your psychologist says. You know, you're my daughter. And, you know, it's way back. I'm only a little younger than Phyllis Schlafly, so I felt that. And it's something they feel threatened about, that, you know, it's just one step from there to the state taking over. So control is a very big issue for these women. They want to control their husbands if they can, and they want to control their families, and they want to control their children. And when I sat in on one of these lectures and allowed myself just to listen to what the comments were, I heard women say it was poignant, that their children don't respect them because they can only earn $3 an hour at McDonald's. I mean, they can't earn their way. And they feel, I once thought of the metaphor, they feel like bridge players who contracted to play a hand of bridge in spades. And then the trump changed in mid-game. And they find themselves with all these little spades that aren't worth anything, and clubs are trump, for those of you who remember how to play bridge. And then you have to ask why, what happened, whose fault? And of course, for them, no-fault divorce is probably the thing that was the most scary. And that wasn't even a feminist issue. There's a whole history there that came down from on high by professionals. And that's really scared them. I mean, their husband can say, I divorced thee three times, like an Arab husband, and walk out. And nobody punishes him.
I think she creates the illusion, in fact, that that women are much more protected under the current system than they
that's
are.
Right. She
creates that illusion and says, oh, this is going to be blown away. What they don't understand, and we long to go and tell them over and over, is that they're in deep trouble.
Well, they're looking at a certain stratum. You know, it's tempting. She's talking to the women in her group, and those women are at least temporarily protected if they're in their 30s and their 40s, and if the husband is not dead, and if he's there coming home every night, they're protected. They're indifferent to all those others. We were talking in her class about the debates over Social Security in the 30s when our Congress people were very empathic to widows. I mean, they just could. There was not too much they could do for widows because they could imagine their own wives being widows. And they didn't want their wives doing what they would have had to do, namely become ladies' maids because they were uneducated. But to the woman who was divorced or whose husband had even abandoned her, I mean, there's stuff in the hearings in the 1935 before the Social Security. They had no interest at all in those people. So these women, you know, block out other people. And if they think about them at all, they probably think it's their fault that there's no husband there. Because if a woman put dinner on the table and...
What did you do to displease him?
That's right.
Yes.
And they know the score. They're not dumb. They're not dumb. They're just
Sheila, I'm
differently configured.
To go.
You have to
thank
go. Yeah.
You.
When? How much time do you all
what a
have?
Treat.
A few more minutes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, just speak up, and we'll. I don't want to take. Why don't the people have to go? Go so that you don't feel embarrassed.
What a treat to see
yeah.
you.
Okay.
Pleasure, Nellie. Thank you.
Oh, you're Nellie.
Nellie Furman. Yeah.
Yeah, it's your name, of course.
Somebody
never met you.
Do you remember Beverly?
Yes, she did.
Oh, I did remember me. Beverly's the one I wanted to put in charge of all of this and who backed off. Do you remember?
Way back.
Way back.
Yes.
Way back. You remember. I threw the ball. You said, not this year.
No, not. I'm still doing math.
I know, but it was, and it's good that you are, but just for the record.
Basically, I wanted to ask about your conclusion with respect to the feminists being seen as respecting men and wanting to be like them.
Well, feminists are defined as man-haters, you know, in the popular press,
I mean,
so I'm challenging
the perception of that, of feminists being as such. How would you respond to that?
Well, you mean personally?
Yes.
I think there's a certain, first of all, a commitment to interchangeability in the mainstream feminism, that there shouldn't be anything men do that women don't. That doesn't mean some women don't organize their lives differently, and there are some divisions on the draft and on military issues, of course. But there's a certain appreciation for the opportunity for interchangeability, I think, which suggests, by inference, that what men do, if not who men are, is worthwhile. And that playing a role in that historical role is worthwhile. So it's a certain high regard for the role, or the opportunity, or the power. And I do think that feminists are less likely to be in wholesale contempt of men. They may challenge, you know, not like them and feel that they're hostile to women and all that, but not. But this contempt is different from hostility. So that those are my comments on it for myself. I don't feel that. I think there's a real difference between dislike, anger, and contempt, and rage. And the way that rage expresses itself in that group of women is, I think, very, very hostile. Or to say it differently, if I were male and I had a choice of spending my life on a desert island with one of Schlafly's listeners or with a feminist, I would prefer a feminist. I mean, I think there's this real view that unless the man is lassoed, unless he's like a sort of a pet animal, he can't be regarded. That's my view. What do you think?
Well, in a way, I agree with what you said, because basically my belief is that there is no such a thing as men's role and woman's role.
Mm-hmm. So you believe in interchangeability of opportunity?
Interchangeability. It's a matter of who is capable of doing what. And as you said, should fight.
You're from another country. What country?
Well, I'm a Muslim. I'm
yeah.
here from the state.
So what do you think is the view of men among women of your background? Would you find similarities here to the Schlafly kind of woman?
Well, not the woman. I mean, yes, talking about the women who are afraid of being, because they've been all their life dependent economically.
Mm-hmm.
Even though not only dependent economically, but socially, particularly, whether it's an issue of being widow or divorce,
mm-hmm.
just because the fact that they have not been prepared for life, period,
mm-hmm.
for doing anything else
mm-hmm.
but being, you know,
and how do they feel about
the
men they're dependent on? I guess that's my question. How do they feel about them? Not individually.
Well, they
so
feel
general.
At all. They feel that they are, you know, their protectors. Without them, their life is miserable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that is the basic task which I see feminism
mm-hmm.
is to take, and feminism particularly from my perspective, Islamic perspective, is that to make these women feel that without emancipating and understanding what it means to be a human being,
mm-hmm.
that a human being has to be free from depending on another human being
mm-hmm.
and feel equal to the other human being, not being above or below.
How do they manage?
They are not
yeah.
going to emancipate
right.
from that dependence.
But how do they manage these men? I mean, if you're that's what happens in this class of women that Schlafly, I think, is appealing to, is they
mm-hmm.
figure out how to manage these men, how to manipulate them. And then because they're manipulatable, they have contempt for them. I think that's probably the dynamic. that they think less of them because they have to manage them because they're dependent. They learn how to manage them, and it's sort of what mothers pass on to their daughters.
Yeah,
and then they have contempt for them.
That brings the whole issue of folklore, as you say, tales of how when a girl is going to marry, what a mother would advise her to
That's
do.
That's right.
You know, I've just was last summer in Damascus, and it was really revealing to me. My sister-in-law lost her husband, and the other day she was saying that I'm completely dead, as if she doesn't exist anymore without her husband. Mm-hmm. He died. He's 60 years old, and she is 10, 15 years younger. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling to her, "What do you mean? You have."
You should thank your lucky stars that he's out of her.
And what they teach their daughter is that nowadays is that spend his money, because if you don't spend it, he will marry another one. That's the conception.
Spend his money.
Yeah,
while
I mean,
you're married?
Don't leave him any money to spend.
See, because whatever he brings home, spend it.
Don't spare it.
Spare it.
Well, that's manipulation. And what do you think then of a man who's you can pull the wool over his eyes and do this to? I mean, you have very little regard. Isn't that right? You see, where there's real differentiation of role. Yeah, where there's real differentiation of role, there can't be any empathy. There can't be any understanding.
Yes.
So there are two people in a kind of antagonistic. The relationship fits, but it's also of two very different types of people, and so the possibility for real empathy is probably not there.
Yeah, but the thing is, when some and I have I'm not going to go about it, but I have some differences in certain aspects of feminism because of my own perspective. One of the things that I find it not really coming across, and I may not have enough contact to feel it, is that the men themselves realizing that without helping and supporting the women to be independent, okay, mm-hmm. not only being sympathetic, not only, as Phyllis Schlafly say, allows me mm-hmm. to be here or do this and do that, but pushing them to be independent, mm-hmm. really pushing them and facilitating the way for them to be independent. Without that, I don't feel still the women are completely independent, and that's again my point of view. And therefore,
you have
I think
to work on
for
the men.
Feminist for yeah. feminist to put a really major task is to work on women to on men to make them really liberated. Not in
mm-hmm.
the terms that
and you have to persuade the men that it's in their interest. And then how do you do that in a Muslim culture? How do you persuade? Is it in the interest of men to have an independent wife?
Certainly.
It is.
Certainly,
mm-hmm.
if a man understands what this whole belief is about. But mm-hmm. if they are just, you know, practicing mm-hmm. By tradition or custom mm-hmm. or tribal. Mm-hmm.
Have you read the book, Not Without My Daughter?
Not yet.
Yeah.
No,
okay. It's
not
an
yet.
Interesting book about a woman who married a Muslim. Any other comments about the work? Yeah, I'd like some feedback.
Question.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you find any examples among Schlafly's supporters of women who were very well educated and very much like her, who took time out of their careers to have their children and fulfill this?
I can't say. I haven't done
back.
The sociology of it. But in another book, and you might find more if you're interested in that question, a book about abortion by Krista Luker, L-U-K-E-R, or L-U-K-E-R. It's called Abortion, the Politics of Motherhood. It's a book by a sociologist, and she studied the women on both sides of the abortion issue and studied them as a sociologist does and has some real generalizations to make and found that kind of woman typically without anything after high school in the way of education. Not educated with time away.
So very,
now, it could be some of those women are quietly contributing money to Schlafly.
Mm-hmm.
But not in the audiences that she appears to address. She goes mm-hmm. to small towns, rural areas, and speaks to them as though she's talking to people who can't expect to earn very much money if they go to work. Mm-hmm. So I would say, without having done the research myself,
rare.
It's pretty rare. But you'll find the Luker book very interesting. Because she looks at these people, and she's looking at Weltanschauung, you know, different worldviews, predicting position on political issues. I think, you know, there's something correct about this. I think that there is a transition, and that the women in that generation, we feminists should have been more empathic, more sympathetic, and understood they were going to have to pay, and pay dearly in terms of status, in terms of children's respect, as well as financial. Those women in poverty today, a lot of them are women whose husbands, and they split up, and you know, nobody really took care of them. So I don't know if they're going to be around in the year 2020 in those numbers. It looks as though they won't, because more and more women with children under six are employed and taking employment very seriously. But certainly that generation of women, who, well, many of whom are my age, I'm sort of the end of that. I graduated from college in 1957, you know, and that was the year the Vassar woman, in interviews, they did a questionnaire, answered that she wanted to have four children. It was that year, my year. Graduates of Vassar, when asked how many children they wanted to have four. And I fled the country in terror of that horrible possibility. I went and lived in Europe for 4 years. Got away. Came back when I was grown up.
Did you have a period of the Eisenhower?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Eisenhower. And it was the other conservative, not the Reagan conservatism. It was the kind of conformist conservatism where everybody in America looked alike and we pretended we didn't have any blacks or Hispanics. And you had a comment.
Yeah, yeah. And have you, the old children in care should be paid? Is this because she thinks that during the children is very small.
No, she thinks, let's separate two issues. Yeah. One, she thinks mothers should bring up their own children for the sake of the children and the sake of the mother. Mm. If we're going to pay for child care for other people, then in fairness, we should pay these women who are staying home. Otherwise, there's a disincentive for them to stay home. But they're two separate issues. She thinks more children should be brought up by their mothers. It should be arranged such that fathers earn enough money so that mothers can stay home.
And her viewpoint is mothers should stay home when her baby is.
That's her
point. And did she stay home when her children were?
Yeah, she did, in that Phyllis Schlafly hasn't really ever been employed in the way most people are employed, that is having to get up and get dressed in the morning and go to a job. Mm. She's been active. But active, one could say, as a volunteer. I mean, even her political activity is at, you know, she's running the show. So she hasn't experienced the real pain of work, which is you're working for bosses who tell you when to appear and what to do, and you have to go in when you don't feel well, and you have to go in when the kids are sick. She's never experienced that. So in a way, she certainly supervised the rearing of her children, the way wealthy women can. I mean, wealthy women can do everything. Right. I mean, if you have money, you have people who replace you in various. She may not have chauffeured her kids to to school. She might have had a taxi, an account with a taxi, so she didn't have to do that. But she was. She did have six. I know. It's partly the Catholic, but partly she wanted to have six. I just thought of something as you were talking that might pull this together a little bit. On comparable worth, she's taken a very interesting position. I find comparable worth a complex issue, and I've written about that too, and I'm not always so, I worry more about comparable worth than a lot of feminists do. But she's produced a brochure that is designed for blue-collar men and their families that tells them comparable worth is going to cost them in their personal paycheck. That if you look, and she's sort of right, if you look at the alternate evaluation schemes for comparable worth, more points are given for education, for interaction with people, for the sort of work that women do. That's the point. Who loses? Women win. Who loses? People who do physical work. Because the points for driving a truck and being in danger or for being in unpleasant working conditions will be reduced. And the points for being in a complaint department, listening to people give you complaints, will be increased. And so she draws the conclusion, and she's not wrong, that the truck driver and the physical worker will lose pay. And she writes this brochure, I mean, she's brilliant, to generate anti-comparable worth support from the blue-collar person, but also and his wife. Because in a one-paycheck family, the loss of income to the truck driver, you know, or plumber or whatever, goes back to his wife. And I went to a hearing on comparable worth in my own town one day, and I think we were all moved by a garbage collector. You know, we sit here at Cornell University or at U of A, you know, in our beautiful areas, and we smell good when we come home. This guy talked about what it's like to be a garbage collector, and he was articulate, he was about 30, and why he needs to get, you know, why it's got to be counted somewhere, that when he comes home, as he said, he can't touch his wife for a very long time. He stinks, and he has to shower many, many times. And his family, his children, don't want to be hugged by him for a long time. And sometimes not for a whole day, you know, depending on what the stink was that day and how much he can get over it. You know, and there we were all, you know, raring to go as feminists. But it stops you, and it makes you realize how privileged we are, even as women who are underprivileged vis-a-vis men, but how privileged we are in working in clean surroundings and being paid to use our minds. And there's a whole army of people out there. And in a zero-sum situation, you know what that means? That it's one pie, and if you take from one, you have to pay in. Somebody loses, and who loses? In our town, the issue was the tree trimmers, who climb up on these fun things in all weather. Of course, in the desert, there's only one weather, and they trim the tree, and they get twice or something like 50% more salary than the library assistants, who are women with master's degrees in library science, who are indoors all day long sorting books and doing circulation. And it was an interesting issue, you know, about tree trimmers in libraries. The tree trimmers rarely have more than high school. And they have very little responsibility, because if you miss a branch, you know, you know, it's not, but they're out there and they're, you know, climbing up on these things, and if the cable breaks, and it's not usually very cold where I live, but it's sometimes very hot, and it's a lot of sweat and all. I don't know. These are big issues. These are complicated issues. And I think what drives me to this kind of study is that I want to get into where things are complex. I like that sort of thing. So, is that coming up? Thank you.
Thank you. Where is the...